This is RSBNB Update, episode 556, recorded Thursday, March 3rd, 2016, the Hyper Bowl of Fruit Salad. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for RSBNB Update. Colton and I are here, as per usual, this week.
Back again, yes.
We're back again after Double XP Weekend and Game Blast. Recovering? Or did you not go too hard?
I feel kind of bad, because I did not go hard at all. Like, this has possibly been my tamest bonus XP weekend, because I don't have any. I mean, I have like six or seven skills left, accepting invention, and I'm just kind of training them slow. And I didn't really feel like training anything fast, so I didn't.
All right. Well, and apparently we do have a update in the same vein as that. Well, we're not going to do much this week. We're going to let you guys all recover from Double XP Weekend, and that is a free-to-play update, the free-to-play extravaganza. A much needed update to free to play, I think.
Agreed. Yeah.
You know, free to play is what RuneScape started as, and February 27th, 2002 was when members came out expanding the game outward, away from the free to play model, and it's just been upward ever since then. So, free to play has received occasional updates, but nothing substantive. I mean, I think one of the biggest ones was allowing free-to-players to train member skills up to level 5, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, that was several years ago.
Yeah, indeed. But otherwise, not too much happens on the free-to-play front. And let's go through some of these updates that bring free-to-play in line with what the members' game kind of looks like. So first up, free-to-play got two new bosses, the King Black Dragon add the giant bowl.
Mm-hmm.
King Black Dragon, I mean, that was the first thing I think we all killed, right?
Other than chickens.
Well, yeah, I mean, boss wise, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And then giant mole used to be members only. Falador Park would give farming ingredients and whatnot. It says, as the agility requirement for the shortcuts in these boss fights was higher than free-to-play characters could reach, we have taken the decision to remove the shortcuts from both members and free-to-play worlds. This should create a more streamlined and enjoyable bossing experience. Mole skins are now sellable for free players too, but only members can hand them into Weissen. So it gives free-to-players a nice way of making some money.
Yeah, definitely.
Same thing happened with the Black Dragon drops, and that is the Dragon Bones and Black Dragon Hides are sellable, but they can't be used by free players. So, again, another good source of money making for free to play. Also, with the King Black Dragon, you'll remember that in Edgeville there's an artifact that lets members get to the King Black Dragon easily that doesn't exist for free to players. So that's understandable. Make them walk through the wilderness and kind of experience what it was like way back when for, you know, having to maybe put yourself at risk to go fight this huge dragon of a boss.
Yeah, it gives them the boss, but it leaves the luxury of being able to get there quickly and easily to the member game.
Yeah, and I think that's fine. And I mean, King Black Dragon, you think that's a serious enough boss?
Not anymore. He's what was it, 2004 was the King Black Dragon, or was it even earlier than that?
I want to say earlier, but
anyhow, it's old and kind of treated as a joke. It's one of the very first ones you go to, of course. It's a master quest cape wreck, but only because it drops a book that's stupidly rare. It's got a cute pet, so that's why people go. But other than that, it doesn't drop anything substantial. And, you know, I mean, even when they introduced all the Dragon Rider gear not too long ago, that quickly, that even though it was fairly valuable, people still didn't go for that. So I think it was good to bring that piece of the members game to the free-to-play players, because as we've said before, they need more of a taste at bossing, at least I feel.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
There's nothing for them in the free game, and that's honestly become, much to the chagrin of many of us, one of the largest and most mainstream ways of playing the game is through PVM, and that's become a source of just that's what people enjoy now. Instead of skilling or doing XYZ, it's become very PVM centric for a lot of people, and that comes from a lot of bosses with neat mechanics and that offer cool rewards and a challenge. And there is nothing of that even signifies that in the free-to-play game before this. And now they have at least a little bit of something. I think the King Black Dragon and the Giant Mole give them sort of a bit of a taste at stuff that is obviously better, like Araxor and the God Wars dungeon bosses and things of that nature that the members game has to offer. But I think it's really important to keep, although you want the free-to-play game to be limited, you still need it to be a good representative sample of what the members game is, just a dumbed-down version of it, if you will. Something that's simple and not quite as nice. It's the light app of the members game full app suite. And I think it's good that they keep updating it and giving free-to-play players something to look forward to in the main game, but not so much that it overpowers the main game and makes it not worth paying for.
All right. And another important caveat with the King Black Dragon and the Mole in particular is that if you're on a free-to-play world, remember you got the limit that you can only wear tier 50 gear.
Mm-hmm.
So Rune and Green Dragonhide?
I think Green Dragonhide is 40, to my knowledge.
Okay. And of course, the same thing applies with weapons. So, I mean, you're not going to be able to, you know, blitz it just like you can on the members world. So there's that aspect, too, that, you know, while we feel that this is, you know, a very easy boss to fight, we all have our tier 80 and 85 gear. But on free-to-play, the highest they have is level 50.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, green is level 40, blue is level 50. So
okay.
Yeah, I just looked that up. But so there's that. And, you know, in addition to this, they did make a number of changes to the free-to-play combat system. Previously, you could not dual wield on free-to-play, believe it or not.
Yeah, and so. I've heard from people that that was a big issue with playing free-to-play. Like, it was beyond the point of just being a bit of a hindrance. It's annoying. Because so much of the game now is based upon two-handed combat.
Two-handed combat?
Or at least a lot of people do dual wielding.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I personally...
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like two-handed weapons and whatnot.
No, I just mean the having your offhand available.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. So that's good. Also, in addition to this, they gain access to some offhand weapons and, of course, the dual-wielding abilities. Havoc and Flurry, Decimate, Dismember, Destroy, and Hurricane for melee. Ranged is Needle Strike, Snipe, and Rapid Fire. While Magic is Concentrated Blast, Dragon Breath, and Wild Magic.
Hmm.
And, you know, once again, this applies to what you said in that this is trying to... provide a bigger taste of what the members game has to offer, because we've had these features since 2012 with the evolution of combat, and free to play is just getting them now. And if you think about it, well, what's the best way of doing damage in the main game? And that is dual wielding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about time that free to play got these. And you know, last year I was helping someone out to get started in free-to-play with the game, and I said, okay, so you want to do this? It's like, oh, oops, I forgot. You guys can't dual wield. Oops, okay. Which is unfortunate. So now they can do that and kind of get in the groove of the members game, which is nice.
Yeah.
Free-to-play Dungeoneering also got an update, new weapons. I'm not a Dungeoneering expert on this, so I'll just say also Dungeoneering gear up to level 50 has also been made available to free players. The weapons are the offhand Gravite Longsword, offhand Rapier, Gravite Knife, offhand Gravite Knife, Gravite Wand, and Gravite Orb. So Gravite equipment at level 50. Dungeoneering, free-to-play... I don't know. I think you have to be a member to get the full benefit out of that skill.
Oh, you definitely do, because their XP is still ridiculously nerfed.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And you know what? Once again, Dungeoneering, I guess. I never thought I'd say this about Dungeoneering, but maybe that's a good jumping off point if someone likes Dungeoneering to get membership.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it would annoy me enough to possibly get membership.
Yeah. So, on a whole, this is probably a good update, and, I mean, you can look at it a number of ways. Oh, Jagex is trying to drum up subscriptions to the membership base, and they want to, you know, draw more people in. Or you can take the positive outlook, which we've chosen to do, and that is that, well, obviously, free-to-play hasn't been updated in quite some time. It's not an accurate representation of what you do in the... members world, so this update was indeed required.
Yeah.
And I think looking at it that way definitely gives us a positive outlook for the future of free-to-play in RuneScape, just because free-to-play was so integral in getting so many of us into the game.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, so maybe that was a good time to start a new free-to-play character. What you think?
I've always wondered, I kind of play around in my mind at least about starting a free-to-play character to do all the free-to-play quests at least.
Yeah.
I mean, people do that with Iron Man and things like that.
Would
but
you do
I've
an
never,
Iron Man?
I don't really know. Maybe, but Imp Catcher, man, I don't know if I'd want to. I like just buying the beads, right? No, that's too easy. But
yeah,
I think I might. Who knows?
I mean, this goes back to something that was polled by Jagex before the in-game polling system, and that's the prestige mode. You don't get to experience the mid-level content in the game once you're level 85 plus and all your skills.
The thing is, though, is that especially, I mean, quests are different.
They're play once.
Yeah, exactly. You couldn't, I don't know if you'd even be able to prestige that, even if it was irreversible.
But I was mainly thinking for skilling content coming up.
Yeah.
Strongholds of player safety, player security. The Nexus. The Great Orb Project.
Yeah.
Fist of Guthix. All these things that were in-game at some point... And, you know, we're hugely popular. I remember Fist of Guthix being out, and that used to be the place to go for free-to-play safe PvP combat. But it's deserted even after the update last October. So, I don't know. Definitely, I think free-to-play is an important pillar of RuneScape's existence, which this week's update demonstrates.
Agreed.
Alrighty, shall we move on to the patch notes for this week?
Sure.
Okay, so not too many things here that are huge, so to speak. Yes, I got that, Colton. I got that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we're just having a little discussion here about show prep and whatnot, and... modifying the questions, but anyway, sorry about that, everyone. Questions will be coming up in just a wee bit. All right, so patch notes for this week. Players with the 15-year emote can now perform the 2005 emote.
I need to do that. I'm gonna do that right now.
Yeah. Oh. You know what 2005 is going to be, right?
I don't remember. What would it be? Oh, I get the 2002 emote. No, that's not what I want to see.
Desert Treasure.
Oh, yeah. Does it have like the crystals and all
that?
Yeah,
the crystals and the pyramid and the ancient staff and whatnot. So,
nice.
The first real, I want to say, evidence of Zaros was in Desert Treasure. And of course, we had inklings from the Dig Site Quest and going way back, you know. I was a Zaros follower before that was a cool thing to do.
Yeah, Shane the hipster Zarosian.
Yep, that's right. And everyone just had to come in and, you know, join the bandwagon, but that's what can you do?
Yeah. Oh, there it is. Oh, and the obelisks and the Oh, and Abyssal Demons too.
All right.
The old model. Wow.
Because Slayer was that year.
Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. Gosh, that's a year right before I started playing. Interesting.
I remember when both those updates came out. Slayer, you know, Slayer was a true gem in terms of RuneScape skilling, because in many ways it was the last classic-esque skill that was brought into the game, meaning that, you know, it took, oh, God, how long was it? I want to say at least 3 or 4 months for someone to get level 99.
Oh, it took about, yeah, at least that long. In its initial form.
Yeah. And I feel that that's something that's lost on the game in the era of instant satisfaction. I mean, I remember going through, we were doing the podcast at the time, I believe. Or were we? No, we weren't yet. But I remember looking at all the updates as they came out and, okay, we got boots. Rune boots. All right. Granite Maul, that was an interesting one. And then the Abyssal Whips came out selling for upwards of 30 million.
Wow.
So,
which, I mean, accounting for inflation is like 300 plus.
Yeah, exactly. Ridiculous. Exactly. So 2005 was a great year. Yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, also resolved an issue where the prayer renew buff was vanishing on the buff bar after teleporting. I seem to remember we had a similar issue with something like that earlier in the last quarter of 2015 with other potions, so it's good this one has been fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Camera no longer resets when entering a Barrow's Crypt.
That's been a ninja fix that people have been requesting for ages.
Yeah, I know.
It was so much that... did you take the... they sent out a survey not long ago, the ninja team did, just asking people for their open-ended... like requests for fixes, and the example that they used, this is before the update came, was fixing the camera for Barrows.
I don't think I got that survey. Was it through email?
No, I just remember it was a SurveyMonkey link that one of the mods had posted, I think, on Reddit and on Twitter.
Oh, okay. Well, that would be why.
Yeah.
Also, players can now use multiple prawn pennies and pounds at once, up to a maximum of 1,000 chargers. That's nice, because then you don't need to have them in your inventory or put them in your bank as you stack up. You could just use them as you get them.
Yeah, that's kind of one of the reasons, like, I finished fishing and have thousands of the prawn pennies, and I just don't plan on opening them, or at least I didn't plan on opening them, because they were such a pain to get open for the small reward that they might offer. So I think I'll end up opening them because of this.
Incendiary Shot now deals damage in a 3x3 area. Previously, it would just explode on the single target. So I guess we got another AoE ability now.
Yeah, that's good. Nice. It was kind of a lackluster ultimate.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I mean, that was one of the things we were promised with the evolution of combat, was that, oh, you're going to be able to use area of effect abilities, but each skill only has two of them. I'm still waiting for more AoE abilities.
And the other thing was that Deadshot, the ultimate that was unlocked at level 2, was a superior, I think Incendiary Shot is 81?
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
no,
something like that.
66.
But there's lots of disproportionalities in the evolution and combat system like that.
That's very true.
Mm-hmm.
I can't beholden it to that kind of level requirement then.
All right. Players now have a few minutes grace period when logging out, where they won't be prompted for their bank pin upon logging back in, including when switching worlds. This functionality can be toggled off in the miscellaneous game settings window.
And there was much rejoicing. This is good.
I'm not sure how I feel about this.
You don't like this?
No, I don't.
What? Switching between worlds and having to re-enter your bank pin? Hopping bank pin, hopping bank pin, hopping bank pin. It annoyed me. I don't know.
I'm
surprised that you don't like this.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel it removes a certain level of purity from the game, adding more toggles when, you know, we don't necessarily really need this one.
Haven't we already accepted the fate? I mean, it's been called affectionately by the Jagex team Togglescape. So, you know, why not just embrace it wholeheartedly and just run with it? Toggles for everyone.
I guess, but I mean, it just feels as though, what if there was some security glitch in the back end and you end up with, you know, not actually having your bank pin be required after a certain amount of time, right? Or what if you log out, someone's watching you log out, and they have your password ready to go, and you're not using Authenticator, even though everyone should be using Authenticator by this point, and you get hacked.
It's the price of freedom, my friend. Everyone has the choice. I mean, we wanted this, we begged for it, so if something happens because of it, well, you know, we only have ourselves to blame. If Jagex is just giving us what the people want, because we have somewhat democratically, although you could say it's not really a democratic process that goes on, because it shouldn't be, because they're a corporation. But regardless, I don't know. I feel like it's mostly our fault. If it's the price of freedom, that's all I'm going to say.
All right. Do you use Authenticator?
Oh, yeah, of course.
All right. You know, we should talk about that more at some point, go through how easy it is to use Authenticator and how you could actually use Authenticator without a smartphone. That's something that we should deal with. I'll make a note about that.
Yeah, definitely.
Players can now toggle the retro cosmetic look of their skill capes in the miscellaneous settings interface of the game settings window. Rather than going to each individual skill master. Once again, adding on to Togglescape.
Yeah.
I personally had no problem with going to the individual skill masters, but once again, that's just me.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue for this one.
Okay, good. Good, 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 good. players can now enable an option in the miscellaneous settings interface in the game settings window to automatically teleport urns to Ernie when they are filled. This option also enables auto-studying the invention skill accumulators.
Huh.
So, rather than having to click your accumulator or the urn, they'll automatically teleport when they fill.
I guess that's nice.
Yeah, I don't use urns, though. Though I might be more inclined to use urns now.
They're nice.
Update.
Add 20% to your XP gains.
My problem with urns, though, is that they take up an inventory spot if you're actually going for resources.
Yeah, that's true. I guess it's a
bit if you're trying to fish rocktails and you want to keep the maximum number of rocktails and you are, you know, have two or three urns and then you have a lobster or some other beast of burden, I don't know. Maybe I'm just doing things wrong, but I don't like that, and that's why I don't use urns.
Huh, I guess it's, again, sacrifice for the gain.
Yeah. You use urns, yeah?
Yeah, at least for, I don't do, I mean, with mining and with wood cutting at this point, I do like crystal trees and seren stones, so I don't really, although I've thought about switching to actual gathering stuff for doing 120s, like cutting magics and things like that. So I might use urns for that. Fishing, especially, of course.
So if you're fishing, how do you do it?
If I'm fishing, I mean, it works with crystal fishing, so I'll just load up my inventory.
Forget crystal fishing.
Well, Then fishing isn't as good of an example because I haven't done it in a long
well,
time.
What about rocktail?
Okay, I haven't. Maybe I'll grab like five, and then the thing with rocktail is I'll probably have five urns, and then I'll have my inventory filled with Signs of the Porter. And my inventory, I mean, I don't remember the exact proportion, which is best.
Okay.
Because then you won't have to take those fish into your inventory.
They automatically go there, and then you just go grab more signs and urns.
Yeah, precisely.
Interesting. See, I haven't hardcore trained a gathering skill since the release of Divination, so that's news to me.
Yeah,
I mean, I knew the items existed, but I never used them like that.
Yeah, they're very useful for gathering skills. I mean, really anything, mining, wood cutting, fishing, all that kind of stuff can make using urns a lot more less intense on one's inventory space.
Well, I'll probably be doing that when I go for 120 wood cutting then, because I know the plan for that is going to be using magics.
Oof.
But we...
Maybe I should then. Maybe good old-fashioned race? No.
Yeah, sure. But you know what happens with people that try and race me, and if they start winning?
I'll disappear into the ether.
Exactly. but I am, of course, waiting for the augmentable tools to make that happen.
I see.
Yes.
To make me disappear?
No. To start that process.
I get you. No, agreed. Do you think we'll see the... Oh, no, we will see the
coming in March at some point, apparently.
Eventually. Allegedly. I thought that was what they were honestly going to come out with this week. Because I thought it was sort of a small thing that was like, we didn't get to do it last month. Something came up. There was a bit of a hiccup. So we're just going to give it to you right after bonus XP weekend is a little bit of a, hey, here's something nice. But... I guess not. I guess it must have been an even more.
Yeah. If I had to guess about this, they were encountering issues relating to the tool belt. That would be what held this back. Because remember, every piece of equipment that you use nowadays is pretty much going to be on the tool belt, the hatchet, the pickaxe, your fishing rod. Those are all tool beltable. And the question is, how do you augment something? Put it on the tool belt and take it out of the tool belt.
I was under the impression that they were not going to allow anything that had been augmented or will be augmented to be on the tool belt. So I thought that was just sort of their way around it.
And you see, the thing with that, though, is let's say you have a crystal pickaxe.
Mm-hmm.
To my knowledge, there's no way to get something out of your tool belt.
Oh, no, there's not. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You have to buy a new one.
So that... That's what I mean when I say it's likely a tool belt issue.
Well, see, that's why I bought up three different dragon hatchets, so that hopefully when people panic buy them when this update comes out, that...
Okay, we have to chat later. I have to pick one of those up.
I hope they're not too expensive now. They spiked initially when the announcement came out. They spiked up quite considerably, but I'll have to check the prices on that. Yeah. We'll discuss that later.
Yes, we will. Business deals are best left for after public consumption.
Precisely.
Players can now... Oh, no, that we already talked about that one. Players returning to RuneScape after an extended break are now set into Legacy Combat and Interface mode by default.
Huh. Are they prompted with, like, sort of a... This is what you're in right now. You're in Legacy, but you know, you could have this much nicer interface if you want. I don't know if they're given that option, if it's made clear that the NIS and all that is available to them.
I'm not sure of anyone who would have come into this, but I don't know. I have mixed feelings about this. How about you?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's nice in the way that it's not theoretically as jarring to an old player who's coming back. And I mean, coming back from the old Stones interface to see like how my interface is now, I would be like, whoa, so much on the screen. I don't know how to digest it all. But I feel like it might, especially if you don't like really encourage it, I feel like you could be setting them at a disadvantage.
Especially combat performance-wise.
Yeah, because it makes it so much nicer having your prayers here, having melee abilities here, defense abilities here, spells here. It's just, it's much more efficient in terms of space usage. And I just hope that it's well communicated that that's
I mean, Jagex can do, you know, those pop-up things that come up about promotions and whatnot when you enter the game. So I don't see why there wouldn't be something like this. So let's hope that there is. But, I mean, let's put it this way. Someone who last played RuneScape in 2010 left when the wilderness and free trade were still gone. So with that being said, they're going to be coming back to a totally different game that has totally different market dynamics, totally different ways of getting resources, and they're going to come back to a game with a different combat system and a different UI. So perhaps easing them into it is the best way.
Yeah, agreed.
And, I mean, you can look at various real-world examples of things like this. You know, Microsoft's Windows. The start menu was the same from Windows 95 all the way to practically Windows 7. with minor add-ons and whatnot along the way. And of course, Windows 8 changed all that. And then people became uncomfortable. They didn't like Windows 8, resulting in a low upgrade rate to it. And then that was fixed in Windows 10, understanding the legacy demands. So with Jagex doing this, it ultimately puts the game in a position where, yeah, you know, you can have what we have now and what we enjoy, or you can slowly ease back into it, focusing on the legacy side of things. And yeah. I think doing this, you know, the same year, or maybe even 2 years after RS3 came out, i.e. doing it last year, would have been a mistake, because RS3 was still the newfangled thing. But we're almost 3 years to the day when RS3 launched, coming this summer. And the good chunk of people who are going to be playing RS currently have likely been around since summer 2013 when RS3 hit. Means that, you know, the people who want to be using the new interface are using it. They know how to use it. And showing people moving to Legacy is not going to have a negative side effect on the uptake of the new interface system as much as it would have had a number of years ago.
Very true.
Yeah. So I guess it's a good idea.
Yeah.
What's this picture you sent me?
The price graph for the Dragon Hatchet.
Oh, that's not too bad. You should be using the one on RSBNB, by the way.
Oh, sorry. I just thought you would. It was the official
that one goes site. Back. That one goes back like a million years.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. It does. Huh. Well, not a million years, but you know.
I got. You're just being a little bit hyperbolic.
Yes, hyperbolic. So one large hyperbole.
Correct.
I don't know why I'm talking like that. Maybe something's getting to me. But
hyperbole of fruit.
Yes. And of course, you got to look at the fruit salad of people playing RuneScape. Everyone makes a nice fruit salad, right?
Yes, exactly. Very well done.
And another thing in the patch notes this week, the XP output of the invention skill accumulators has been increased from 1,000 to 2,500 XP. Okay, that's good.
Mm-hmm.
So, and once again, that ties in with the earn update.
Yeah.
So, I'm happy about that. Couple of additional free-to-play world changes as well. The Aerostorm, Bladestorm, and Spellstorm drapes can now be worn by free players. Okay, I didn't know what those were. The Mole Shield now stores 500 charges, up from 150. Updated the combat stats for all creatures in the Stronghold of Security. And players with quick teleport set on free worlds are no longer blocked from using a regular home teleport on free worlds. So that's good.
Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. That's a nice set of patch notes this week, eh?
Agreed. It's smaller than some previous, but got some good gems in
there. Yeah, still had a very powerful impact, especially on the free-to-play stuff and that legacy mode option, I think. And like I said, a number of years ago, even maybe up to last year, I'd say this wasn't really a good issue, but you might as well do that now.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on. Back in September of 2015, Jagex released something called Darkscape. Did you try it?
No, but I kept my ear to the ground and knew some people who were quite involved in it and enjoyed it, at least for a little while. And I thought it was really neat when it came out. I thought it was really cool that Jagex had played it so close to the chest and hadn't let really anybody in on their little secret about this update. And it was cool, but it was sort of a flash in the pan kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was nice, but it didn't seem very sustainable. It was attracting players that played RS3, but it really wasn't attracting anyone new, you know? It was, and I guess some people from old school might have been attracted to play, but it's not like you're going to get a lot of new, entirely new subscribers who don't know the world of RuneScape going directly to Darkscape. It's sort of the hardcore version. It's like the hardcore Iron Man, except even more hardcore.
Yeah.
And your first character in the game is not going to be a hardcore Iron Man. It's going to be a normal player, if not just a free-to-play player. So it was kind of feeding off of a very limited group of people who, especially given how much emphasis is placed nowadays on one's place in the game, with regards to XP and ranks and things like that, that it would be tough to keep people there. And I mean, some of their combat updates and things of that nature were very unique and intrigued players, but it just wasn't enough to bring anyone new in. And so gradually if you start with a group of players that is not going to grow, the only place you can go is down, really. And player numbers quickly dwindled to where they are now. And it's kind of sad to see what it's become, because it was a really nice concept, but I'm not too shocked by its demise.
Yeah, and basically, I'll just paraphrase here. At the end of March, on March 28th, the Darkscape servers will shut down. Mm-hmm. And for those people who have played Darkscape since the beginning of 2016, with 20-plus times logged in and 10-plus hours of playtime, they will receive a month's membership in Standard RuneScape.
That's really cool. I think that's really nice.
Yeah. Because you remember, Darkscape was all free to play, and the only benefit that membership gave was that you got more XP.
Mm-hmm.
So, also, anyone who spent 10 hours or more playing Darkscape from launch until today's announcement will receive a special cape in the main RuneScape game as well. So they are, you know, saying thank you to the players for participating. This wasn't all lost. You do get some membership, and you do get an item to remember your time with.
Yeah.
Now, I think I said when this came out that Darkscape was a good experiment for PvP. And the question I had is that, maybe if this is successful, we might see some of these mechanics come into the main game. I'm not sure where we're at in terms of how successful Darkscape was, specifically in relating to its PvP content, not necessarily just the amount of players, but I'd be interested to see what they can ultimately do with some of the ideas of Darkscape going forward, maybe in terms of modernizing PvP and RS.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we talked about it many times before with the whole, I'll say it again, the multiplaying PvP strategy, and you need that in order to make PvP work. It just won't start working on its own. So, mm-hmm. Darkscape was an interesting aspect there with that. I wonder if we'll see any more little projects like this going forward in the future related to other RuneScape aspects.
Yeah, you gotta wonder if this puts a bad taste in especially the developers' mouths and kind of makes them think twice about doing these sort of one-off type spin-off games, I guess you would call them.
Yeah, definitely.
In the future, yeah.
But, I mean, there's a point where you can prototype things. You prototype things on paper. You prototype things as a playtest for you. You prototype things as a playtest for the office. But you can't really get a sense if it's going to work until you take it to a much larger game community, which I think is what ultimately happened here.
Yeah.
So, anyways, at the end of the day, I know there was lots of people interested in Darkscape, but when it comes down to it, just not economical, I guess.
Yeah, it's, I mean, we have a question digging a little deeper into that kind of stuff here in a minute, but it is hard to justify keeping that sort of, I mean, the private server level of servers for old school can stay up because they have such a large and dedicated following, unfortunately. But this, I mean, keeping servers open and people dedicated to that game for the small amount of players that are playing consistently doesn't really seem worth it.
Yeah, and I mean, ultimately, when it's going to come down to it, it needs to be a choice about where to put the investment. But I think we'll leave it as is for now, and yeah. I'll just say that the reason I stopped playing Darkscape was that the clans were separate, and I could only use a friend's chat while in Darkscape, and I was basically gated off into a whole different community, which I didn't like. So I just came back to the main game.
Don't blame you. Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty. And, of course, as we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, this weekend was Double XP weekend, focusing on Game Blast. So Jagex has given us a news posting detailing the very much successful weekend that they had. They raised over $150,000 for special effect.
Yeah, holy cow, that is a lot of money. Is that the most that they've made before?
I think it is. I think it is. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's up there, definitely.
Which is awesome to see, because, I mean, people were afraid that in-game donations would be down because of the effects of invention on the economy, but...
Evidently people, not.
Well, I mean, they offered a lot more avenues this time to donation, I mean, with the eBay stuff and...
12,000 pounds or $16,800 raised from the eBay charity auction.
How much did that the visit go for? You know?
I don't know. I don't know. Because, you know, they disappear when they're sold.
Oh, yeah, true.
And I didn't look at it after by the time. But Devastates was the highest GP owner, giving over 5 billion GP, which is worth about $1,600.
My goodness.
Juxta was the top bond donator, giving 501 bonds worth $2,500. And 311 came in second with a close 500 bonds. So that's obviously the person's name. 311 donated 500 bonds. So amazing work there.
311 bonds.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, you can donate more. Why not?
That's true. If you have the means, I mean, goodness.
Yeah, I donated two bonds and about 18 million GP worth of stuff.
Dang.
All was basically proceeds from the week leading up to Double XP weekend and the potions that I made on Double XP weekend. So I did take Tannis's advice and actually donate my proceeds from the weekend into there. So
it's awesome.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, and of course they also say thank you to all their sponsors, but I have to say that this is the best way to do a Double XP weekend, and I assume that this will of course be happening again next year.
One would think. I mean, they've, what is it, 3 times in a row now that they've done it, or 4 times?
Yeah, and especially when you can bring this much money in for such a good cause and rally the community around that. It's really great.
It is.
I love Jagex for doing that.
It's definitely been one of their best moves over the last, not too long, with the Well of Goodwill.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree. I was a bit surprised that they didn't open it at Christmas.
Huh, yeah. Could have done like some sort of charity for kids.
Yeah, and I mean, everyone thinks that Christmas is the time to donate, but of course those donations are needed all throughout the year as the Game Blast 16 special effect donation comes in. So if I could have one suggestion, it would be to open it at other times. Maybe open it once in the summer around Independence Day, and open it again in December at Christmas time. I think that would be a really great thing to do.
Yeah, agreed.
So, full commendations go out to Jagex, the community members who participated in this, and of course, everyone who donated.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's it for RS updates this week, unless there's anything else that's itching that you want to discuss.
Nope.
All right. So, as you mentioned, we have some questions. First one is from Pernasius. It's an audio question, so we'll play that right now.
G'day, Shane and Colton. Pernasius here with a couple of questions for you. Firstly, carrying on from Trekkie's question last week regarding the double XP weekends and what you'd like to see, what would you think about Max players being able to trade getting double XP for a token of some sort from Max, whereby they could select one of the minigames such as Livid Farm, Dominion Towers, Castle Wars, etc., where they could get double rewards from them to help in the quest of comp or trimmed comp capes? Secondly, with the demise of Darkscape, do you think the player base is justified in their anger about its closure? I can understand the core base being upset, but realistically, there are only a couple of hundred players, if that, at any one time on the 3 to 5 worlds I had. I looked in 2 or 3 weeks ago, and 2 worlds had less than 100 players, while the most popular one had about 160. Are players being unreasonable in their demands that Jagex keep it open and trying to start a riot about it? Looking into the overall costs of keeping dedicated servers operational and maintained, etc., I don't believe the benefits would outweigh the cost of this. It was a fun project, but aren't we all better off having those mods who were working on that dedicating themselves to the main game and ensuring timely quality updates to this game that is the main source of their revenue? Anyway, that's all for this week. Thanks for the great podcast and happy RuneScaping.
So Max players having the ability to get a token on double XP weekend to get double, you know, Livid Farm points or maybe double Thalers or something?
I think it would have to require a decent amount of double XP, and I think it would have to be very... It would only be able to be double XP weekend. It would basically just be like a double mini game weekend for them.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd have too much of a problem with
it. And you wouldn't be able to choose both.
Yeah, exactly. It would be sort of an and or not and or, if, regard one or the other. There, that's a better way of putting it.
But if you do that for one group of people, what if there are people that say, oh, I don't want double XP anyways, give me the mini games too.
They can sod off.
See, that's my only concern with doing something like this is that...
I guess.
I mean, unless, like, I think the token idea is the best way to go about it, because if you are maxed in a skill, and by maxed, I think we have to say that means 200 million XP in that skill.
Yeah, given the modern
interpretation. Because if you're not 200 mil XP, you can still get XP and chase that goal. Yeah. So I think that's what it would have to be. And, you know, you could apply it to double Dungeoneering tokens too. Double everything that we mentioned. And, you know, thinking about it now, if someone was maxed to 200 million XP in that certain skill and they could apply it to a token in that skill, Dungeoneering or Livid Farm, if you're farming or magic or something like that, I think that's a compelling argument to do it for only purely max players at 200 mil XP. Because what else are they going to get out of the weekend, right?
Well, then you're making content for like such a select elite few, is it really even worth doing that?
We're coming full circle here. We're going to both say that ultimately this is a horrible idea.
I don't know. Maybe if they had made it an option, as you were saying earlier, for everybody, except it was like, it was only one and a half. You could choose between double XP or double minigame stuff, but those without the 200 mil required would get only 1.5 times minigame stuff. I don't know. Maybe. Obviously, that's just an idea, but who knows? Yeah, honestly, in
because
the end, I think
we
it's
have
a little
double
bit...
Dungeoneering weekends, double minigame weekends as it is already.
It seems redundant, and it's because we just had that. I mean, December we had those weekends, the winter weekends as they were, and with mini games and skills and XYZ. And although it is March, so I guess it has been 2 or 3 months since then. It just seems like it'd be a little much, and it's an added layer of why, kind of honestly, that's how I feel.
Yeah,
I think it would be unnecessary.
Like, I can see the idea of giving it to maxed people, but like you said, such a small amount of the population that these people have already maxed. Does it make sense to be catering to this audience given the current state of, you know, the level up arc in RuneScape?
Yeah.
So, I thought this was a good idea going in. I'm not so sure now.
You've thought about it, mulled it over, and have decided otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same. I mean, it's an interesting idea. I just don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm not a developer, and there's a reason why. But I just don't think there's a clean-cut way to make it fit too well into the sort of the dynamic that we already have with Double XP Weekend and make it feel... like it flows organically into that sort of a groove.
Right.
That's just my opinion.
All right. Well, we'll move on to the second one, specifically about players being justified in whining about Darkscape being closed.
Yeah, we kind of glossed over it a little bit, but I think I'll reiterate the fact that I think this is the right decision. In the end, Darkscape was nice. It was cool to see. It was a cool surprise to wake up and see what? There's a completely new game out that they told no one about. I mean, I was shocked. I didn't play it, but I was genuinely shocked and excited for the people who were, of the sort to play that kind of game. But it seemed like one of those things that would be a temporary deal. Like,
and indeed it was.
In my mind, I think I gave it like about a year max, and it did not last even that long. Which is unfortunate, because it was a unique concept and something that was, I think it would have been cool to have, especially for free-to-play players, to get a different way to access members' content, albeit at a much... at a much increased cost of in terms of risk factor. But I don't know. I think that it was a good thing to do, to as long as those devs are going to something productive.
They will be.
Yeah, and not microtransactions or anything like that, but actual game content, then I think this was a good step.
Yeah,
something that needed to be done.
And when you have people so-called rioting, when, as you said, there's only maximum, 200 people per world? In how many worlds were there? Like 3 or 4?
I think 3. I don't know.
And you extrapolate that, that's really not that much of the entire RS population. And I would wager a guess that indeed some of the people who were probably rioting were probably just standard run-of-the-mill members who enjoy doing this just for, you know, let's have some fun and make it look like we're upset with Jagex and something's going to happen. But, you know, Jagex was entirely right in pulling the plug on it. And, you know, the only way something like this would work is that if it was a part of the main RuneScape game, because we know how many developers it takes to run old school. I think they got like 7 of them or something only on old school.
Yeah. Aroundabouts.
And that's obviously a different kind of project. They're writing their own content, and you would need something similar, if not more, for Darkscape, because it obviously requires more complicated models. It requires, you know, development going forward in that it is trying to be a new groundbreaking game, whereas, you know, old school RuneScape is just old school RuneScape. There's not as much creative license there in terms of ensuring things are bound to lore and whatnot. So it just would not have been economical from that point to keep Darkscape going, I think.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But, you know, the players rioting, it's not going to have a large effect on the game community as it is, because Darkscape is already going to be closing down at the end of March, and these people will either quit, they'll go back to old school, or they'll come back to RS3. So they're not going anywhere, because they obviously like something about RS. At least that's my understanding or guess on the situation.
Yeah, you're probably right on at least, in, I would say, venture to say 95%+ of that population.
Yeah, exactly. Or they can just start a hardcore Iron Man. And, you know, do things that way, because sometimes, I know for some people, the whole allure of Darkscape was that it's a brand new economy with nothing else in the game, and that is going to be a very interesting thing to play through, I heard. So with that being said, you can kind of accomplish that with hardcore Iron Man, or Iron Man in general, because you don't get to interact with the other economy, or the entire RuneScape economy, because you can't trade and you can't use the GE. So.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I think that about covers that, unless there's anything else.
That seems good to me.
Alrighty, I'll let you read this next one.
Alrighty, this next one comes from our old buddy Earth. Dearest hosts, some questions for you. Colton, when did you get so whiny? Has Shane really rubbed off on you that much? Shane, what is the hardest thing you have ever done? Love, Earth. Thank you, Earth. For context, everyone, I was bugging Reed for a question, and he wouldn't give me the question, and I was relentlessly telling him that I was disappointed in him until he sent this question. So I feel like he is justified in calling me whiny. So I apologize, Earth. It is my fault, I guess. We're recording this a day early, just a little bit of behind-the-scenes stuff. So I was asking for questions, so I do apologize. But I hope I don't appear whiny in other portions of the show.
I cannot make that assessment, because I do not know what a whiny Colton sounds like.
Yeah, it sounds like this. Maybe. I don't know. I don't often try and... you know, imitate my own darker moments.
Yeah, that's not a good thing to do, believe me.
Oh,
boy, the hardest thing I've ever done. I don't know if he's shooting for a specific answer here or not. Hardest thing I've ever done. Well, I can tell you the hardest thing I've ever done on RuneScape was killing Nomad the first time, up to lucky 13 tries. So there's that answer. And of course, this is before EOC, and I think I had Guthans at the time. But if I didn't have Guthans, that would have been really hard. Harder than it was. Hardest thing I have ever done in real life. Colton,
waking
you,
up every morning? No.
Do you have a hardest thing you've ever done in real life?
Dealing with idiots every day. dealing with your crap, Reed. No. I'm sorry. Just had to. No. Life is a joy. I don't know.
It really is for me, too. And I can't think of anything that was, you know, a monumentous uphill battle.
Agreed.
I mean, I mean, if I was to put this academically, that was something that was really hard, but ultimately was very rewarding at the end. This is going to sound very weird, mm-hmm. but it was discovering a breakthrough on the best way to handle 2D vector calculus.
Huh. This is being rather vague.
Well, okay. So, you know, standard calculus, you basically have scalars, and that you can say you have a certain point X, but you also want to know the rate of change for point X, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's just one-dimensional right there when you think about it. And yeah. you can do that with a standard related rate problem, and then you can apply it to triangles with trigonometry, and then you can figure out when two trains are going to crash if they're on an intersecting course or if they're not going to crash. So that's what standard related rate calculus is. Now, you can apply two-factor calculus on that, where both of them have different rates of change. So that's a multivariable calculus. But take it one step further, and 2D vector calculus is the same thing as that, except they might be going in different directions in 3D space.
Hmm.
So that is, yeah. That is
interesting.
Yeah, I don't know the easiest way of explaining that to people, but that is something that is difficult at the outset. But once you wrap your head around it, it is extremely rewarding.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, another hard thing to do is performing row operations on multidimensional matrices in the linear algebra space. So
yeah.
I can say that those were probably the two hardest things academically I ever did. But that we probably just put half the audience to sleep there, didn't we?
I guess. Maybe.
Have you done a foray into calculus or linear algebra at all?
I stopped after Calc 2.
Oh, okay. And what is that? What is Calc 2?
I don't even remember.
Is it like multivariable or?
I think we started to brush it. We'd done multivariable at least a little while in my second semester of it, but nothing too deep.
All right. And you would probably call my vector calculus thing deep then.
Yes.
Alrighty. Well, if anybody wants to send questions in about RuneScape, tech, or pretty much anything, including what the hardest thing we've ever done, leading me into a discussion about related rate problems and multidimensional vector calculus, then you could do that by sending them to questions@rsbnb.com or leaving us a voicemail on our Google Voice at 571-57-BNB, which is 571-572-2632. And once again, I hope that questions segment did not put anyone to sleep.
Nah.
Alrighty, so on to tech news we go. Google has their self-driving cars, and for the first time this week, one of these cars was involved in an accident where the self-driving car was at fault. There's been 17 accidents in the past, but all of them have been caused by other drivers.
And unsurprisingly.
Yeah, they've been driving for the past 6 years. Basically, what happened here is that one of these self-driving Lexus SUVs hit a bus at Mountain View, California, It was traveling at the high speed of 2 miles per hour.
Wow.
Yes.
Was anyone hurt?
Of course not. The accident was a result of road conditions that were compromised by sandbags placed in a lane, which caused the Lexus to move into the left lane. The municipal bus was approaching in that lane at 15 miles an hour.
Okay.
So.
Got off easy on this one, Google.
Well, they say the car anticipated that the bus would slow down, while the bus driver believed that the Google car would retreat from its effort to merge, and there were no injuries, as we mentioned. So, I mean, when you think about it, wouldn't you rather say that, or wouldn't you rather have self-driving cars? Because they can, you know, they're not prone to the same problems that humans have.
I mean, if in an ideal world where that was like everybody, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, obviously we can't do that today, but I mean, this just, of course, made the headlines because it was, you know, the first time that something like this happened, and of course it's minor. So the question is, how can we take these sandbags as a potential problem going forward and make sure that it doesn't happen again, albeit at a higher speed, at a more dangerous speed.
Yeah.
So, but Google knows full well that the car, that the computer in the car made the wrong decision, but they also would like to say that this stresses that the incident reflects the kinds of guesswork that goes on between human drivers.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if anything, it's reassuring that something like this can happen, because it means that the cars think and act, well, not think, but they're programmed to think in the same way that the humans do.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, once this technology gets all ironed out, and like you said, the vast majority of cars out there are self-driving, the roads are going to become a whole lot safer. And it's widely expected that our generation, or maybe our kids' generation, will be the last one that actually has to, you know, physically drive a car.
That's unfortunate.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you'll be able to take full control of it, or if you want to, but, I mean, if you can be safe and have the computer do it, why not, right?
Yeah, I guess. In normal, everyday situations, but I mean, like, in if you're just driving any old vehicle. I mean, I guess this would only apply to like commercial road vehicles, and as opposed to say like ATVs and things like that, which are just fun to drive. And
well, yeah, of course, it wouldn't be for ATVs and whatnot. It would just be road vehicles. So,
what about like a motorcycle? Would they do that kind of a thing? Because that takes away like the freedom aspect that people usually drive motorcycles for. Would this just not appeal to motorcyclists at all?
Well, it would be an entirely different control set, but there's no reason why it couldn't be extrapolated to a motorcycle.
Yeah, I guess. Because I feel like that would have even more backlash from those who would be forced to adopt it.
Yeah, but I mean, like you said, a motorcycle is not designed to be a form of transit for a good amount of people. It's something you want to go ride when you want to enjoy yourself, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, alrighty. And of course, this happened after more than 1 million miles of autonomous driving over 6 years. So that just underscores how safe these vehicles actually are.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, moving on. Microsoft has made an announcement with regards to the release of its development edition of HoloLens. And for anyone wondering, HoloLens is Microsoft's technology that allows virtual reality to be projected onto the world around you. As in, you might be looking at a 3D model of a building that you're designing, or in its simplest form, you're playing Minecraft and you can look at your 3D Minecraft building on your coffee table. So those are the kind of things the HoloLens will be used for.
It looks like all those old, like, well, not super old, but from a decade plus ago movies and like all the hologram stuff, technology that it looks like it's all come to life. It looks really neat.
Yeah. And I mean, as I've said before, Microsoft really has the grand vision for what technology is going to look like. So I
just implementation.
Yep, exactly. But if somebody out there is a developer for the HoloLens project or Windows in general, you can apply to purchase one of these HoloLens. They will begin shipping on March 30th for the price of $29.99. That's $2,999.
Only got to shell out a cool $3,000.
Yeah, and I mean, comparatively, for other to other virtual reality pieces of technology, this is cheap.
Yeah, I guess I see what you mean there. That makes sense.
Yeah, because, I mean, the first computers in the 1990s, the PCs, when we got our first computer, was upwards of like $4,500.
Yeah, true.
So this is really cheap in terms of new technology and enabling developers to experiment with it and ultimately create new things. And it just shows Microsoft's dedication to the platform and saying that, okay, so we are doing this. And eventually there will be a consumer version for this, or maybe even a commercial version for people who work in research and whatnot. So it definitely shows their commitment to this part of the Windows 10 environment, which I could not be happier about. So I just thought I'd share this with everyone. It's basically a smartphone type of computer that acts as a display and is linked to companion applications on a Windows PC. That is the 10-second pitch for HoloLens, and of course tying virtual reality into all that. So it's going to be really fun to see what developers make from this, because so far all we've seen is Microsoft demos and Microsoft partner demos. So allowing developers to get this into their hands is going to open up a whole new aspect of computing that should be really exciting.
Definitely. It's the future.
Yes. And final piece of tech news is on the encryption front, but not directly related to the Apple FBI battle. But last weekend, on I believe the 28th, Brazil arrested a Facebook executive for his unwillingness to hand over WhatsApp user data. WhatsApp is the application that Facebook purchased. It's an encrypted communication platform that was in use by many people around the world, and Facebook bought them. And as a result of this, the Facebook executive in Brazil was detained, and ultimately his release was ordered when they realized that, oh, we can't get this encrypted data off WhatsApp. But the real story here is that Brazil actually arrested a Facebook executive over not being able to return this data.
Hmm.
And it, I mean, the FBI-Apple battle is one thing in the U.S., but ultimately, this just underscores where this battle is going in the future. And today it's Apple and the FBI. Tomorrow it's going to be WhatsApp, and who knows what it's going to be going forward. So the question is, how can something be created with encryption, but how can you get the legal authorities in countries, not even just the U.S., but Brazil, China, Middle East eventually, to accept this encryption? Or is it going to be a case where encryption is not going to be able to be used? That's the question that's being answered right now as this plays out. And, well, I mean, encryption will always be able to be used by open source platforms, but the question is, will companies like Apple, Facebook, Twitter, so on, be able to offer its users strong encryption?
Yeah.
They want to, but some governments don't want that. And that's the question that needs to be asked going forward, and it's going to be an interesting battle of 2016, I think.
Yeah, I think we're really starting to get into the thick of seeing governmental bodies sort of clashing with the technological side of things.
Yeah, and I mean, this obviously doesn't affect anyone here because you're not a Facebook executive with the WhatsApp data, but it makes everyone start to think about, where do I stand on this whole encryption front? And is there a common ground that we can utilize in our developed and, what I want to say, legally and judicially fair countries, namely Canada and the US, that doesn't allow less legally fair countries, Brazil, China, Russia, Iran, and so forth, to exploit people who are using the technology over there.
Hmm.
So while it would have been a simple thing to do back in the olden days because the world was much smaller, today decisions and solutions need to be for a global audience.
Yeah.
And for me personally, I normally stand on the side of law and order in these kind of things. But at the same time, if you make encryption that can be broken, there's no point in encryption. So even for me, it's a tough stand to take either way on this. So I'm watching these battles shape up very closely.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, so I just encourage everyone to think about encryption and what it means to you and ultimately what it means to people in less fortunate countries, because while we have it so great here, the ability to have something decrypted here means that Russia can do it as well. So
yeah, very true.
It's a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, anything else on that?
Nope.
Okie dokie then. Well, I'm going to move on to some end of month stuff, including the February skill of the month, which was won by Dave. It was the Constitution skill of the month. He gained 10.1 million experience. Sorensen 57 finished in second with 8.8 million experience. And Parnassus finished third with just over 5 million experience. And as we can see here on the graph, bonus XP weekend, Dave overtook Sorensen for the win. Sorensen also gave it a try, but he was unable to compete with Dave on the bonus XP weekend and lock in the win. So, very interesting finish there, and congratulations to everyone who participated.
But, good job.
Yeah, 10.1 million Constitution XP.
Wow.
That's not too bad.
Not at all.
Anyways, looking forward, the March skill of the month is invention, as promised. Since invention came out at the end of January, we didn't have time to set it up for the February skill of the month. So just a couple of days in, Parnassus is in the lead with 1.5 million XP gained.
Oh my.
Meanwhile, Jamandy 52 has 26k, and Sorensen 57 has 12.7k. And you have a grand total of 22.
Yeah, man. I'm waiting for... I thought that skilling thing... I was kind of banking on it coming out early in the month, so I'm hoping it comes out soon, because I was going to get all my XP via skilling. But Parnassus jumping out to a rather commanding lead. He's really the only spike on the graph. Everyone else is sort of just chilling around.
Well, Undoer is 3 XP.
Yeah, I know. He's beat me out in... mediocrity, I guess.
But yeah, very early days in this, and we should have an invention update coming this month that brings skilling tools, which should allow some very interesting ways, hopefully, to train the skill.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, I think we should talk about some of the... we should talk about the Informer Roundup first, shouldn't we, before we run through that long list.
Definitely.
Well, the Informer Roundup is out, covering all the articles written by the fine Informer writers in January, from Alex's 15th anniversary RuneScape quiz, your Nomad's Elegy review in terms of lore, Tannis talking about the accessibility of RuneScape, which we touched a bit on last week's podcast. Mr. Bistro had a review of the NXT game client, and I talked about fostering diversity in RuneScape's content with Rune Labs. And also, this month, we are still looking for at least one new writer to write about RuneScape. So if you're listening to this podcast and you like RuneScape and you like writing, pay attention here. We would like you to write a 750-word minimum article to talk about Jagex's 15 years of RuneScape, or you can tell the readers about your favorite non-combat feature currently in-game. We also do have some categories for bonus points, including pictures and rich media, pizzazz. I didn't write this, so pizzazz was not my word. And a willingness to go against conventional player, community, or Jagex wisdom. That was my point that I put in there. You can send these to myself or King Kulla on the forums at rsbnb.com/forums. And be sure to include your RuneScape name, country, time zone, and the easiest way to contact you. So if you like writing about RuneScape, we ask our writers to do one article per month, 750 words. We're very flexible with scheduling, so if that's a concern for you, we can definitely work around that. But all in all, it's a great way to get your ideas about RuneScape out into the wider community, and we support our writers quite a bit with podcast appearances, getting their articles out there. So yeah, if you like writing about RuneScape, definitely consider joining our writing team.
Yes, join us.
Yeah, yeah. You were one of our last RS hires, I believe.
Yeah, I was. I think I might still be the new guy, in fact. So
you've acclimated quite well, and you've done lots of great stuff on lore for us.
I try.
Anyways, achievements of the week.
Woo! Here we go.
We'll just alternate. Yes.
Okay, I'll start. First up, we've got Grove Street, who got 99 Herb Lore on
99 Herb Lore on March
1st, 2016.
Scaper Jim 99 Summoning on the 29th of February, 2016.
BK Tricks with 99 Construction on February 28th.
Also, Chief Snake, former host of RSBNB Update, woo-hoo, Brad from New Zealand, got 99 Construction on February 28th. Story about that one. He started doing that that goal way back in 2010 and finally finished it.
Really? Wow. Good on ya, Chiefy. All right. Next we have Sirion, who got 99 Summoning on February 28th as well.
Grove Street, 99 Construction on the 28th.
A little guy named J1, J2, J3 got 99 rune crafting on February 28th.
He also got 99 woodcutting on bonus XP weekend, February 28th as well.
Scaper Jim got 99 herb lore on February 28th, 2016.
Good job. And the RR man, 99 magic on February 28th as well.
We also have Undoer, who got 99 crafting, an expensive one, on February 28th, 2016.
Yep. Arcane, otherwise known as Dave, 120 Dungeoneering on February 27th.
120. Fourth Power also got 99 fire making on February 27th, 2016.
Pythagoras got 99 prayer on February 27th.
I have a theorem about that. No, just Scaper King also got 99 construction on February 27th, 2016.
Undoer 99 construction on the 27th.
BK Tricks with 99 crafting on February 26th.
Tricks also got 99 herb lore on February 26th as well.
Scaper King got 99 agility on February 26th, 2016.
Undoer 99 fire making, February 26th, 2016.
And rounding out the group, we have the lovely Kiwi, the RR man, with 99 farming on February 26, 2016. Congratulations to everybody. That was a lot of achievements.
Yeah, I think this might be a record-setting list. I'll have to double-check and go back.
Man.
So I think we had 16 or 17 ones from one person. So
yeah, that's true.
But I like the one we ended with, RR Man 99 Farming on February 26th. That's probably the best one out of the bunch here.
It's a good note to end on.
I agree. That's what bonus XP weekend does. It brings out the dedication of everyone. Everyone completes their goals, and we get to talk about them at the end of the podcast.
I guess so. Clearly.
All right. So we're also going to talk about your pick of the week.
Yes. Again, I'm going to bring one of my passions of real life into my pick of the week section. I love wine. For anyone who does not know, I work at my university's enology lab, planning to become a winemaker, and I've actually made my own. So something that helped me kind of get started, and if you're intrigued at all by wine, if you just enjoy wine, even if you don't, and it just is something that's like, you might want to know more about it for like dinner party, talking to people and conversational knowledge and those sorts of things, there is a place for you, and that is wineformnormalpeople.com. And the main thing that I really got from this source was their podcast, which is available on iTunes. It's just Wine for Normal People. But they also offer the facilitator. Basically, it's run by a certified sommelier and her husband, who is just a normal guy. And they basically banter back and forth about various topics. They discuss regional type stuff. They discuss different varieties, different practices with how to treat wine and what to do with it. And basically just brief histories. It's sort of all over the board. There's a deep archive of podcasts. They're all very interesting. They're very well done. They offer classes, basically done over Skype, just video calling. And you basically, she can train you in how to to kind of pick out notes in wine. It's just a great resource for anyone who's looking to maybe learn a little bit more or sort of expand upon their current knowledge regarding the lovely drink of wine.
All right. How long have you known about this website?
Maybe a year and a half, 2 years.
All right. Yeah, it looks really comprehensive. Wineformnormalpeople.com. What would you say is the number one thing you learned from it?
I learned a lot about regional stuff, just small things that you don't get from reading a book, because there are several interviews with winemakers from various regions, if you're into that kind of thing, and it gives sort of a better insight into the production side of things. And it's also nice because the host of the podcast, or hostess, or whatever you want to call her, she is very experienced in the wine industry and from the business side of things, and gives a different perspective than one gets from someone who has purely been either a sommelier or just an author, and is just writing about wine from a more objective standpoint. And it gives an interesting lens to that world.
And the cost for these classes is only $40 for two people. That's relatively inexpensive.
Yeah, I mean, you buy the wine, which is going to be most of the expense. They're not crazy expensive wines by any means. She usually picks $15 to $25 bottles of wine, which are fairly middle range, upper middle range. But they're very personal. Very well done from what I hear. So they're a good investment.
All right. Well, that's a very unique pick of the week. I don't think we've had anything like that before. So that's great. Thank you, Colton.
No problem.
Wineformnormalpeople.com. All right. So what did you do for Double XP weekend, or what have you been doing?
I had, I think, like 700 protean planks sitting in my bank. And so I went over, I grabbed those, I made some tables, dropped them. Or no, I did not drop them. I dismantled them, because I am an efficient invention XP getter. And that's what I did for that. And
you made
then
tables?
Yeah.
With
made
protein
mahogany.
Huh? You made tables with protein planks.
Yeah, why not?
I was under the impression you couldn't flat pack with those.
Yeah, I flat pack tables.
With protein planks?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Sat at my bench and
I was under the impression that
time.
That doesn't work.
No, it totally works.
Oh, so I spent an hour and plus making real wood tables for nothing when I could have been just at the workbench.
You could have just sat at the workbench, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So they're really nice. Glad you learned that now, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. See, I don't use these protein things that often, so.
Yeah. So that's what I did. And then I promptly re-geared with my thieving gear, went back to hunting my elite clue scrolls. which has been to little or no avail.
Your ship hasn't come in yet.
No, still not. I'm sitting at, I think, 148 elite clues, and nothing of great import. So we'll see. One day.
That's unfortunate. Well, anything else?
No. Real life, just finishing up some exams. Got one more week until spring break, and just sort of finishing up classes and winding down a bit.
Winding down a bit?
Yeah, I guess.
Whining
maybe.
With your wine?
It's none of your business. No, yeah. Possibly.
All right. As for my double XP weekend, I got 104, level 104 Herblore,
woo,
which was about 891,000 XP. I should have got more, but this was all farmed on my own, with the exception of purchasing, I want to say, 600 nests. The rest were, again, sourced on my own as well, so I'm really happy about that result.
You've been religiously doing your kingdom for those, or?
Yeah, also the daily enhanced farmer's hat gives you 4 nests.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't seem like much, but it adds up over time, right?
Oh, yeah. Everything does.
I used some protein bars. I only had like 30 of them, so that wasn't much. But, you know, like you did, I did do some construction as well with that, except mine turned out to be, rather than using a workbench, I ended up just, you know, doing it using tables. So lots of clicking in my way of doing it, but that's okay. And I got around 650,000 Hunter XP using a bunch of protein traps that I had as well. So it was basically just cleaning up my bank from all the Treasure Hunter stuff that I had accumulated over time in terms of that, in addition to the Herblore. But aside from that, I donated all the Ceridoman brews I made, as well as 2 bonds worth of GP to the well, because the week leading up to double XP weekend, I was farming incandescent energy, and I thought, why not? Let's just purchase 2 bonds with the week's proceeds and donate them to charity. So I did that, and I was very happy with that.
Yeah, good on you, man.
Yeah. But I also did write this last month's, February's Informer article entitled Fostering Diversity in RuneScape through Rune Labs. You'll remember last week we talked about which of the Rune Labs ideas we'd like to have for the current criteria. So I basically put this in word form, and I advocate that everyone follow and support the ideas that we talked about last week. That is the Eastern Lands, the Zen Gardens, and the Tide Pools. Meanwhile, offering up a bit of an explanation about why this criteria is the best one that Jagex has ever done, and why this should be the future of Rune Labs going forward.
Read it.
Yeah, definitely. Informer.rsbnb.com for that, or link in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com.
Yeah.
But I believe that's it for this week, so I think we'll say goodbye until then. A little bit of a quieter show this week than last week, which is always good, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
So we'll see you next week. Thank you for sharing your time with us. And if you want to chat with us, we're in Friends Chat Bits Bytes.
See you around, guys.